Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Book Wars Pod. I am Chris and I'm here with my co-hosts, Kate and Kristen. And Kate is making a face at me right now.
You just look really high.
Oh, yeah. I popped an anxiety pill before recording, so now everything's just smooth sailing from here we go.
Like the sound of your voice is really amazing right now.
I know. I feel like I have a very soothing rate, like very
it's
Terry Gross.
So soothing. Radio voice. I'm going to fall asleep.
And now, on your evening commute, we want to turn to the economy. Here we're interviewing Milton Friedman. Milton, what do you think about today's Federal Reserve's decisions?
He thinks stupid things.
I'm going to throw myself
off. He does, because he's Milton Friedman. Oh. anyway, no, we're talking about Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson, which I guarantee you is a better read than Milton Friedman.
Accurate.
Regardless of what you think of Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson, I guarantee you it's a better read than Milton Friedman. And last week, we talked about the start of the book through chapter 13, I believe. Yeah. And yep, so this 13. Week, we're talking about chapters 14 through 22. Where we left off, Phasma had just left her tribe with Brendel to go try and find Brendel's ship and the Stormtrooper ship.
Ye old Hux.
Ye old Hux.
Chris, are you going to ask us what we're drinking?
Oh, yeah, I am. Well, I mean, I can start. I'm drinking tea because, as I said, it's been an anxious evening. And so now I'm like this. Kate, what are you drinking?
I am also drinking tea, and I'm drinking kombucha because you won't let me drink today, so.
Yeah, one more day.
What do you, fuck you I guys.
Think. Okay, well, sorry we don't want you to die, or.
I want alcohol.
I understand. I am drinking a hopped saison by our good friends at Grixen Brewing Company in Portland, Oregon. That is the brewery. It's been a while since I've had Grixen on the pod because it's been a while since I've been there. But I am kind of like one of their like founder club members, so they give me free beer when I go in there, which is great. But my good friend is the head brewer there. So I'm having their hop saison. And it comes in at 6.7, 36 IBUs. Pretty tasty. It's exactly what it kind of sounds like.
Cool.
Nice. That sounds great.
Yeah. And look on the gram for pictures. So I think this is probably catching on pretty quickly elsewhere. But in Portland, you can get these things called crowlers if the breweries have crowler machines. And they're these 32-ounce cans. And then they fill them up with beer. And then they put on, like, a top. And then they stick it in this machine that seals it. And then you can recycle them. So it's not as green as, like, just bringing in your own growlers. But it's nice because, like, if you don't have a growler with you, you can, like, still get fresh beer to go. And it's obviously a can, and it's a little bit smaller. You know, it's half the size of a regular growler. So it's pretty much like 2 pints. So they're great. It just looks like a big old can.
Thank you for explaining that, because I know crowlers are becoming a thing in DC, but I haven't bothered to, like, sit the fuck down and Google what the hell that means. So.
Oh, yeah. I know, you're just like, stop spelling growler wrong, because they're lazy and didn't come up with a new name for it. They just put a C in front of growler.
No, yeah, it's fine.
So, yeah, it's just basically means like big can.
Sure.
It's beer language for giant can.
Too big for Kate.
Too big for Kate. Whereas like I've sat down with one of these and like drank it like an actual beer.
That tracks for both of us.
Yeah, I've done that on the podcast before as well.
I was going to say, like, this feels very familiar.
Yeah, I know, but it had been a while, so. But I think Chris has our first point, but I don't know what we want to say to introduce it, Kate.
Can you please just read what you wrote on the outline, Christopher?
Yeah, just literally, what the damn hell? Like, what is going on in this book? And, like, I just, you know, speaking purely in universe, but like, what the damn hell? Nothing is making sense. It's Mad Max literally like having war rigs going after each other. like being held hostage by crazy droids. And I don't know, to me it just seems like this is a really fun, like, I really like it because I'm all about the weird, you're about the weird force shit, I'm about the weird galaxy shit. Like, this is some weird galaxy shit. Like, this is a stranger look at the galaxy than we have seen in any of our books that we've read. Or, I think, in any of the movies, in any of the Star Wars canon that we've seen.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because, kind of like Thrawn, it's sort of just, it's this episodic format, just this complete series of misadventures.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's completely absurdist, which is fascinating. I think, honestly, the closest thing I can compare it to is something like Gulliver's Travels or Huckleberry Finn or something like that, where it's just, they, like, the main characters just keep running into all this completely bizarre crap, like all these weird, weird, weird situations.
Yeah, if it had, and this is going to sound mean, it's unintended to, if it had a point, it would be satire.
Right. No, yeah, exactly.
Kind of.
But it doesn't have a point, it's just Star Wars.
So it's absurdist.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, and the fact that it's Star Wars and it's not a satire is weird in and of itself, because like it, the first section is we were talking about when we were just looking at the Sire and, you know, the dingy torture room in the bottom of the what are they on?
Annihilator,
thank you.
Absolution.
It's a word.
I knew I couldn't have remembered that.
The bottom of the Absolution. It feels very gritty, to use my favorite word from last episode, as Kate just shakes her head. But it feels dark and it feels very real. And then it's just a complete flip. Like, we have gone through the gates and entered Willy Wonka's chocolate factory on Parnassus. And things are crazy now.
Yeah, it really is not parallel, but there are two very distinct stories going on in this book. And of course, one is nested inside the other, but they feel really different. I'd be really interested to know if Delilah wrote this book kind of more or less straight through, or if she wrote one story before she did the other one.
Like, if she wrote Phasma and then wrote Vi around it?
Yeah.
Good question.
Just because they're so different tonally.
I would love to know what that process is like.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know. Hopefully she's not listening to this, because I'm sure we're going to have some things to say about her in the wrap-up, but...
but anyway, to get back to my original point about how weird this is that, like, this is the first time we've seen such a huge range of cultures and environments on the same planet. Like, usually planets, you just see one thing. Like, you have Tatooine. It's a desert.
Sand.
You have Mustafar. It's lava. You have Coruscant. The whole planet's just one big city. Like,
no, it's totally true. I definitely saw on Twitter when the Solo trailer came out that we weren't sure at that point really what planets we were going to be on. And we have a little bit better of an idea now, but not necessarily what the geography and the topography of each one is. But what the person was saying was I'd really actually like to see a planet that has a diversity of environments as opposed to planets that just globally have one kind of ecosystem. And we actually get that in Parnassus.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kate, and I was just going to kind of build on that. I was thinking of the point as you were saying it, so it was fortuitous. But the other really interesting thing about it is we haven't seen kind of character building and world building of this fashion, just to kind of like put that, make parallels between the actual story and like the writing. Because, I mean, I think they kind of feed off of each other, right? And I think it's really interesting. Like, we haven't seen any worlds that that look like this, so we haven't seen any real world building that kind of acts this way. And I think that's always something interesting. Excuse me, something interesting that, you know, we get. Oh my God, sorry. You guys know I drink beer and eat ramen, and I belch into the mic the entire episode.
Fine.
But that's something that I love that we always get to delve into in this podcast is like, it's so, I think it really plays off of each other, like the writing as well as the world building itself.
Right. I think, honestly, I think maybe the only other two novels we read that have approached even a little bit this level of world building is Rebel Rising by Beth Rivas, where she invented Inusagi, and Inferno Squad by Christy Golden, where, oh god, I can't even remember what planet they were on, but it's the one that's half of it is nighttime all the time, half of it is daytime all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's interesting because, like, both of those places were kind of still super different from Parnassus, right? Is that how we're saying it?
Parnassus.
Oh, God. Sorry. It's from me reading it wrong the whole time.
It's fine.
Parnassus. Like, Parnassus, it not only has, like, a wealth of different, like, environments on the planet itself, but it's also kind of like we're kind of getting the group is seeing things on the horizon, right? And then we're kind of building up to starting to understand what they are, and I think that's a really, really, really interesting way to kind of build things out.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you wanted to say, since you have read the whole book, something more about what we can expect tonally from the rest of Phasma's story.
Oh, yeah. So, like, we thought shit was crazy last week, right? We talked about how shit, we were like, this is all new. This is nothing we've really ever seen before. Plus, we've got, like, the story within a story, and that's also kind of new for Star Wars. But when I was checking the chapters to see, like, where we were bookending, for this episode, I was like, oh, this is right before that thing. And I was like, oh, this shit just gets even, like, next episode, you guys are going to be like, oh, it even gets crazy. Like, it gets so crazy. It gets crazier every episode. Every episode, it gets crazy. Like, every kind of episode, quote, quote, like of the episodic nature of the storytelling, not just in the podcast, but I mean, it really builds on itself, and I mean, like, a lot of, we're kind of in the middle part now where this is the kind of shit that you know something is going to happen, but you can't really tell what's going to happen. Towards the end, I would say it gets a little bit more predictable, but I don't think that, like, discounts it from it's batshitness. Like, I think it gets cray cray.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's a truism at this point that there are no new ideas, but there are original ways of, you know, getting to the point. And oh man, this is definitely one of those.
Yeah, and the thing about it to me that's so interesting is just looking at kind of our larger questions about the Star Wars universe and where we go from here, and you know, how there have been some discussions in the fandom about, do we go in this direction, do we go in whatever direction, are stories getting stale? And this just shows me there's all these stories just sitting on or under the surface of all these unexplored planets that, like, you could write me a whole, you know, epic sci-fi fantasy story about how the city of the Atura was created. Is that what it's called?
Ataru.
Sorry, my vowels were wrong.
Y'all are,
everybody's vowels are wrong this episode. Yeah, I'm right. Also saying that, like, wrong.
Yeah, just give me a whole trilogy about how the Parnassians,
maybe,
let's go with that, how the Parnassians built the city of the Ataru and, you know, left the other Parnassians out to die. Like,
I don't know whether we actually get an answer to why Parnassus is such a fuck shit disaster, but I would read that too.
Yeah, like, who wouldn't, like, read a Fall and Rise of Parnassus book?
Right. I mean, it's almost like Lost, where it's just like you have all these mysterious stations and people came to do a fucking science or wherever the hell, and now it's the hell, they're all gone.
Mm-hmm.
You are gonna get some background to that in the book, so
cool. Okay, be just about I'm glad that
because it, I mean, it leaves you wanting more, of course, like all good stories do. But I think, like, I was pretty satisfied with kind of the backstory. And that's why the shit just keeps getting crazier. Like, somehow, even though we know part of the story, that makes it even crazier to me. So, but anyway, as you may be able to tell, I was a huge fan of this book, as I talked about last episode. So
I'm loving it so far. It's nuts, but
it's fucking weird.
What I was gonna say, which is kind of an aside, is that I'm still recovering from surgery, so I've been at home for the better part of, but the better part of pretty much an entire week. I've been stuck in the house, so I've been reading ahead and stuff, and so I'm like literally sitting on the couch while Chris is trying to work from home, and literally yelling at this book, and Chris will be like, "What?" And I'll be like, "No, spoilers, shoo." And he'll be like, "But," and I'm like, "No, spoilers." And so I'll like, Keeks, I texted you the other day being like, "Oh my god, Phasma did a thing," and you're like, "What thing?" She does a lot of things. And I'm
Which
just like,
thing?
Oh my. I know. And it's just like, oh god, what else is gonna happen? Anyway.
Yeah, you were like, this thing, and I was like, oh yeah, that thing is a thing. I think is exactly what I texted back.
Yes, it's so good. Anyway.
Oh, man. Can we talk about that thing? I don't even remember what you're talking about.
No, we cannot.
This part? Okay. Well,
no.
Okay. Stay tuned for that thing.
Next
if we remember to talk about that thing.
Next one.
Next one.
Speaking of weird shit and other stuff, that was a really good transition.
Speaking of queer,
Kate, do you want to talk about maybe some of the like abandoned droid situation, which is the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen? Maybe second to like the clone army that nobody knew existed.
Honestly, though,
that's what like rang in my head. I was like, this is kind of like when we had a clone army that we didn't know about.
You're so fucking right. So obviously, in this section, we don't get the whole story about Phasma and her group's stay with the Ataru, but we do get the whole story about Troop Sikora Station, which is, first of all, like, this a horrible, like, horror movie setup where I thought the robots were gonna come, like, stab them in the face while they slept. And it's also ridiculous because they were like, you have become an indentured servants now, praise the creators. And I'm just like, what? And Phasma is like, sure, I'll just put on these fucking overalls and go in the mine and, like, slap some ore or whatever the hell in a cart. And I was just like, what the hell is happening? But as I've mentioned on the pod a couple times before, I do my own kind of sci-fi writing, and my special focus often is robots and like AI, just because that's my personal interest. And so one thing that's been bothering me, but something that's been like kind of poking my brain with a stick in recent years is how no one really addresses the fact that droids in Star Wars are pretty much sentient, but they're still also tools, even though, you know, you've got droids like R2 or Chopper who are kind of like the family pet. But I don't know. It's like it's just become this weird gray area that no one ever fucking talks about. And I'm one of the things I enjoyed in the section where they're in Troop Sikora Station is that we finally do talk about it, because Brendel just walks into the control room and shuts off all these droids, and Civ's like, you just destroyed an entire civilization. And I was just like, oh shit, he literally did. And it was just, I don't know, it's, I don't really know what I'm saying besides I'm glad someone's finally talking about this, and I really want to see that more, because it's just, it's weird, honestly, that we've had Star Wars for 40 years and no one has said anything before this about droids.
Well, yeah, and this was obviously taken to the nth degree, right? It's like, these droids have not been, like, taken care of at all from, like, how we think of droids needing to be, you know, to some degree, they're computers, right? They need, like, maintenance and all that kind of stuff, and obviously they went a little, like, off their programming a bit. They went a little bananas. So we have like that extreme, and then we have the extreme of Hux just going in and shutting them all down, just like straight up.
I know,
which,
like
we've also never seen before.
I mean, speaking of like stabbing people in their sleep, they're just like turned off, resting for the night after like saying their prayers to whatever their creepy like shrine to their creators is and whatever, and he's just like, well, bye. And I was just like, is that it? Are they gonna like somehow come back to life and like chase them around the desert? No, they're dead.
They're not, they're actually full dead.
I was like, oh shit. I mean, all right,
we saw some of that kind of stuff in the Clone Wars cartoon. Or not the Clone Wars. Oh my god, my brain. No, the Clone Wars cartoon. Oh, Kristen, your brain's not working. with, you know, obviously there was a clone army of droids. So there was a lot of kind of that stuff, but they were all portrayed as like fucking idiots.
Right. And there was at one point, I think pretty early in the series, there was an episode where Mace Windu was very skeptical of the fact that Anakin relied on R2 so much. And he's just like, what's your deal with that droid? He's just a fucking droid. And Anakin's like, don't say that about my dog, you know? So
I love him.
I know. So it's that kind of thing. And I mean, when we see, of course, on Rebels, Chopper's just like the fucking crazy cat that you know, your friend has. But yeah, this is the droids in the Constar Mining Corporation, they have literally have all the, I think, the anthropological definitions of a civilization. They have, you know, they have routines, they have a religion. It was just this weird mind-blowing thing for me. I just had to like put the book down and go, oh god,
for sure.
And again, just to reinforce the point I made earlier, I feel like where all these questions about where Star Wars is going to go from here, it's just like right under our noses of there's all these stories that we want to hear because we just don't know about them. But when Star Wars tells us they exist, we're like, yeah, that's amazing. Tell us more.
Right. I mean, like I said, we have 40 years of no droids, but, you know, we have cartoons like The Clone Wars that explore the humanity of clones who are honestly supposed to be like flesh and blood droids in a sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, there's a lot of unmined material, definitely still.
Give me a
unmined
Clone Chronicles.
Oh my god,
series.
A Clone Chronicles series, you said, Chris?
Please, okay. Yes. Also, how not surprised were you guys to see mining facilities on another planet in fucking Star Wars?
I was just there, and I was like, sure. I'm not. I was just there, and I was just like, honestly, can Del Rey pay me $1 for every time I just find a mining facility somewhere?
Honestly, it reminded me of. Did you guys watch Lost?
That's what I said.
Well, it reminded me of the Dharma Initiative.
That's what I said.
You did?
Yeah.
Did I just totally miss that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's okay.
Chris is...
I'm going to go back to sitting on my chair and being high right now.
For the record, Chris is sitting way back in a lawn chair because that's one of the quietest chairs we have in the house. And he's just literally like looking at me like he just smoked a bowl and is falling asleep. He did not smoke a bowl, by the way.
Virginia. These are Cedar problems. The quietest chair we have in the house.
Okay, listen. So we're recording at the fucking dining room table. And when we got this apartment, we were fresh out of college and we had to get like the shittiest IKEA furniture. And now it's really old and even shittier. And so like, if you heard the end tag a few episodes ago where Chris is just like adjusting himself on a chair and it creaks, then Kate's just like, get a new chair. Oh my god.
Because it's so loud.
It is loud. So anyway, Chris is in the quiet chair.
Chris needs to be in the quiet chair. Kate, you had like a whole other fuckload of fuck to talk about. Speaking of droids.
Oh yeah.
So you wrote here cogs in the machine. Do you want to just first explain like what you meant by that?
Yeah, totally. So at some point, Civ is looking at the stormtroopers and, you know, she's seen them with their helmets off and everything, when they're in full uniform and they're in battle, they're these amazing warriors and they're these amazing tools of the First Order. But then she starts to realize, you know, especially after a trip to Cory Station, how exactly are stormtroopers different from droids in at least Hux's eyes? And if Hux is First Order leadership, then how is the First Order really valuing human life and seeing these people as individuals? Just because the society that Civ comes from, you know, everyone's individual talents are really acknowledged and embraced and put to good use. And so that's really what I meant. Like, why is Phasma so attracted to becoming one of these faceless soldiers? And, you know, it's not just because Phasma's interested in perpetuating Cyrus society, because, like, Phasma allegedly claims in the first part of the book, because she only took a few of her people. Like, she didn't, it's not like she decided to, like, take her entire tribe and, like, go recolonize somewhere. So my question was, like, are the droids that Hux murdered, like, are they more human than Phasma or any of the stormtroopers? And then why do we think Phasma wants to assimilate so badly? Especially because we're seeing a lot of the story through Siv's eyes, and Siv is horrified by this.
Well, you're making FN2187 really upset right now with that question.
I'm sorry.
Chris, did you want to jump in?
No, I mean, just to say that I think you hit on, like, several points right on the head there. Like, I think, A, the fact that Siv is the narrator here, through Vi, of course, but Siv is the narrator, and she is not a reliable narrator. She is somebody who feels like trust is being broken and is terrified right now. Like, this isn't from Phasma's point of view, where we can see, like, Phasma has a plan and, like, is thinking 10 steps ahead of everybody else. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense so far.
But what is Phasma's plan? Do we, like, we have an inkling about it? Because Siv is, like...
Not really.
Real confused.
It seems like Phasma's plan is to get to Brendel's ship at all costs.
Sure. But why? Yeah. That's what I'm asking.
No, I don't think we know why. Other than she hates being here. Yeah, she hates being on Parnassus.
I don't think that gets fleshed out much. I think it's just, like, she wants to get off planet. Wants to... you know, whether or not she wants to, like, send anything back to, like, help the rest of her civilization, that's, you know, they kind of leave that up in the air, but she is very I mean, I think your question probably, Kate, is, like, why is she so focused on getting off planet?
Yeah.
You know, it goes a little bit deeper than, like, her singular focus, but
yeah,
I mean, obviously, like, her life sucks balls right now.
Right, but it's just,
and
like...
And it did before Hux's ship crashed.
It's true. I just... For me, it could be a number of different things, and I'm not sure if it's, you know, all or none or a combination of the above, but it's like, is it power? Is it bloodlust? Is it survival? Or, you know, curiosity? I literally don't know.
Yeah, and one thing that's kind of been in my mind reading is that, like, when this book came out, I remember reading a proper interview or if it was just a tweet storm by Delilah S. Dawson, the writer, and basically talking about her goal for writing this book. And she's like, there might be things in here you like, there might be things in here you don't like. My goal is that you get out of this and understand why Phasma did what she did on Starkiller Base in helping Finn turn off the shields. And that's... I feel like that's an angle that I'm missing so far. Like, I'm very curious to see, like, what is her driving trait? Is it that just survival at all costs is her driving trait, and she's actually kind of a coward? Is it that she is playing, you know, seven-dimensional chess, and we're just not seeing it, and neither did Finn? That's kind of what I want to know about Phasma. And I know we're not reading the Captain Phasma comics on the pod anyway, but I haven't read them personally myself, and I'm gonna after I finish Phasma the book, and I'll see if there's any more answers in there too.
Yeah, I might read those with you, Chris, just so that, because I want to.
There you go.
I fuck you, Marvel, for not letting us read it on the pod, you assholes.
Right. Thanks for putting a white guy who impersonated an Asian person in charge of the entire company.
After he broke rules about writing.
Yep.
Woo.
Woo. Great.
And I had another point on here along the lines of what we're talking about, but I think I want to save it for the wrap up just because I have... I mean, Kate's question was, why does Phasma want to assimilate so badly? And I think we're just starting to scrape the surface of that, and I don't want to be tempted to talk about stuff or be vague about stuff that we don't know yet. And I think that's going to become an even bigger question kind of as we move through the novel. And Chris, I don't know how much your questions are going to get answered, but rather than becoming more questions, but I think those questions do make you think a lot about the possibilities of what Phasma can do. I'll put, kind of put it to you that way. But
I mean, I love it.
I love this book.
That's legit, dude. But yeah. We're going to have so much to talk about in the wrap up. Like, I feel like if this is one of those books where you get to the end, you're like, it either all comes together for you or it doesn't, you know?
Yeah, it's like Thrawn. Yeah. We felt like we were like totally. This when we read Thrawn, too. The first couple episodes were really light, and then it, like, picked up a little bit, and then we got to the wrap-up, and it's like, oh, we have so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, another kind of throwaway funny thing that is I found interesting about this book. I think it's funny that, for the most part, the three of us have been referring to Brendel Hux as Hux, just because we're so used to referring to people by their last names, especially like captains and, you know, people of military rank in the Imperial Navy. And he goes by Brendel this whole book, and it was so weird and funny to me.
That's an interesting observation that I definitely noticed, but I didn't like consciously process it. And I almost want to also
fucking
talk...
Fucking Brendel? Like, that's not... First of all, it's a weird name, which is fine.
Thanks. That's, but I'm like, that's good.
Well, just like... I'm like... She's like, you know, anytime Phasma is like, we have to save Brendel. I'm like, it's like a weird... He feels like a weird stepdad when you call him by his first name like that.
Yeah, I don't... know if we've gotten to this part yet. This isn't really a spoiler, even if we haven't, but at one point one of his stormtroopers calls him Brendel, and I was like, what the fuck is happening right now?
This is what I'm saying. It's so strange. I'm like, is it just like all bets are off? Like, the stormtroopers don't get to have names, but he gets to go by his first name? That's fucking bizarre.
Yeah, that's...
And like, you don't hear his like, it's just weird to not hear him go by his rank.
Yeah. Know?
I wonder how much of that is if Phasma, like, at the beginning, like, laid down the law and was like, because I remember she called him Brendel Hux, like, all the time, like, which is a very, like, foreign language learning thing.
Well, and then, yeah, but then they drop the Hux. That's my point.
Yeah, well, yeah, and
they
then Brendel,
call him Brendel,
and then
Brendel Hux,
was
they just
like,
call him Brendel.
Yeah, Brendel was like, no, Brendel Hux is two names, and then she's like, okay, Brendel.
Well, I think to be fair, in maybe this is stereotyping, historically communities have been similar to Phasma's, but it's almost like, I don't know, in ancient Greece or ancient Rome, where it would be like, you know, Scipio Africanus, like, that wasn't really his name. Like, Africanus wasn't his name, it was an epithet. So, I mean, if you're gonna call him by his actual fucking name, then you're gonna go with the first one.
It's true.
Interesting. So, yeah, I just found it like noteworthy. I was like, we have not seen that in any other, like, you know what I mean? In every other Star Wars book, it's like very it's like two friends that are maybe in like the Navy together that would call themselves, like, call each other by their first names, but otherwise it's like rank.
Sure. And I now that you're saying that, I wonder if that was Hux's design to kind of get people to trust him, though. Because,
yeah,
by not arguing it, because he's crafty like that. Like, he'll absolutely pull rank when he wants to, but he's also a fucking weasel, so. Mm-hmm.
He's a crafty fuck in this book.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting, one thing maybe we'll talk about at the end or on the wrap-up is how Brendel is crafty and Armitage is not crafty.
When you're named Brendel and then you name your kid Armitage... Like, God.
We're definitely going to talk about that at some point. Cause,
well, yeah.
Yeah, probably with Aftermath, yeah. Or...
Well, I don't know that we need to talk about during Aftermath. We can talk about during this.
All right.
Cause
have
we
you
know,
guys read
we
Aftermath?
No, we
both
have.
Both of you?
Kate has not.
You have, though?
I have, yes.
Is there a lot of Hux in there?
There's a lot of Hux.
Baby Hux?
They're mostly in Empire's End.
Okay. Just wondering. She has a Hux thirst.
I think we mean Hugs.
Hugs. General Hugs. With an H.
General Hugs.
Tall, skinny guy. Kind of pasty.
With an H, even though H is not even a letter in the Star Wars universe. I hate fanboy sometimes.
I know.
Oh my God. Anyway.
With an H, oh, X-wings, Y-wings,
guys, none of it makes sense. It's all going to be okay.
You know why? Because it's all faking in space. All right, we're getting real off track here, so we want to wrap it up.
The bombs drop. Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Oh, my God. You're high as a kite. Like, you need to go to bed.
It's still going
to
wrap us up. All right, well, thank you for listening to this truly special episode of the Book Wars Pod. Next episode, we're going to continue with Phasma, reading chapters 23 through 28. So kind of like the third quarter of the book. In the meantime, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, or at Book Wars Pod, all those places. Email us at bookwarspod@gmail.com. And please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. There are only 7 ratings on iTunes right now. Ratings are the ones you don't even need to type anything, guys. You should, like, it's a one-button click.
Chris, I think you say please one more time, we'll have just as many 0 additional reviews as we do right now.
If you review the podcast, we'll read your review on air. You can be internet famous for like 2 seconds.
We have not done that for literally anyone else.
Well, we don't have enough. We'll do the old ones too.
We have lovely, lovely people who have reviewed the pod.
Well, they can get theirs read first.
Oh my God.
This is really good. This is great content, guys.
Yep. Anyway, so rate, review, and subscribe to us and to the Tashi Station Radio Mega Feed. And donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon. It helps us to cover our hosting and production costs. It helps the whole network to cover those costs as well, so we can keep bringing you the same amazing content without spending our money.
Nice.
Which we fucking love.
It's great.
Let me be clear. We love being part of Tashi Station Radio, because now we don't have to pay for hosting, because you awesome fuckers do it for us. You perfect angels.
Yup.
This is a mess.
Anyway.
Not us.
That, I think, wraps us up. Thank you to Tashi Station Radio, our parent network. Thank you to Poddington Bear for our theme song, Whiz Bang. Our logo and artwork are by Jovi Terra Design. For Kristen and a just hand on her forehead, Kate, I'm Chris. Thank you for listening to episode 38 of the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week.
Chris, I've never heard you like this.
Chris, did you just spill tea on yourself?
No. Literally no.